Okay, let's begin the afternoon G2 session. So, first speaker, Bobby Acharya, who's going to be speaking on M-theory, singular G2 holonomy spaces at n equal to 1 theories in 4 dimensions.
So I'd like to firstly thank the organizers for inviting me to such a lovely location. So I'll be speaking mainly about these two papers here. But I'll be mentioning Kumran's paper from last August, the paper of Attia Vafamaldesena, and the forthcoming work of Attia and Witten, and also mention the. But you've already heard in the talk of Mina's Aganagic, sort of dual. A relationship to dual descriptions of what I'm saying. So M theory compactified on a G2 holonomy 7 manifold gives rise to an n equals 1 theory in 4 dimensions. And if the 7 manifold is a smooth space, then one gets a spectrum which is relatively uninteresting physically, because the low energy dynamics is described by a supergravity theory coupled to abelian vector multiplets and neutral chiral multiplets. However, what I want to convince you of today is that the physics of M-theory on singular G2 holonomy spaces is interesting. And you might expect that because at the level of differential geometry, a G2 holonomy space is very similar to a Calabi-Yau space. Very similar to a Calabi-Yau space. In fact, you could define such a space by the condition that it emits a covariantly constant spinner with respect to the Levi-Civita connection. And as you know, Calabi-Yau spaces can be defined that way. And in fact, type 2 string theory on any Calabi-Yau threefold is a special case, very special case of M theory on a G2 holonomy space. So if you're convinced, and I think many of you are already convinced, that type 2 string theory near singularities of Calabi-Yau threefolds is interesting, then in some sense I've given you a positive answer to the question. But one would like to explore more generally what could happen for more generic G2 holonomy, intrinsically G2 holonomy singularities. Okay, so before one undertakes such a study, it's useful to ask what one's naive expectations might be. So the first thing you might want to find, or you might hope to discover, is that at certain singularities you have non-abelian gauge fields, non-abelian gauge symmetries. Perhaps more ambitiously, you might hope to prove that at certain kinds of singularities in G2 holonomy spaces, chiral fermions are in some sense buried. And it follows from work on Kaluza-Klein, essentially because the index theorem on an odd dimensional manifold is zero, on a smooth odd-dimensional manifold is zero, the Dirac index, or the index of any elliptic operator, there can't be any chiral fermions in smooth parts of moduli space. So that would be something that one might expect. And perhaps even more ambitiously, one might hope to find some more exotic physics. So today I'll just be offering you try and convince you that, or I'll show you that what the first of these possibilities is realized, and the low energy dynamics is an interesting theory. As for point two, I'll maybe come back to that in my visionary couple of minutes at the end. Okay, so I want to motivate now the kind of singularities that we're going to consider. And the motivation I'll offer is the following. You start with M-theory compactified on a K3 surface, then we know, or at least we believe strongly, that that theory is equivalent to the heterodic, periodic, or type 1 periodic, or type 1 string theory on a 3 torus. And since Strominger, Yao, and Zaslow have argued that if a Calabi-Yau threefold has a mirror, then it emits a supersymmetric T3 fibration, then we can hope to fiber this duality by applying the adiabatic argument of Baffer and Witten, where on the heterodic side we take a Calabi-Yau, so we take a three-dimensional family of theories which ends up being the heterodic string on a T3 fibered Calabi-Yau. Then on the M-theory side we should end up with a 7 manifold of G2 holonomy, which is K3 fibered, and that follows from supersymmetry. Now, for a smooth Calabi-Yau, the low energy four-dimensional theory is N equals 1 supergravity coupled to super Yang-Mills. And from the M-theory point of view, the non-abelian gauge fields come from singularities of the K3 fibers that fibers this space. But if we're interested in just studying the dynamics near those singularities, we should look for a local description where we can replace the K3 fibers by a local model for those singularities, namely C2 mod gamma, where gamma is a finite subgroup of SU2. So we should look for 7-dimensional spaces with G2 holonomy, which are bundles of with fiber C2 mod gamma over some 3 manifold. And those are the kind of singularities that we're going to discuss. So if this, the base of this vibration has large volume, then since in flat space the C2 mod gamma singularity gives 7-dimensional ADE super Yang-Mills, supports a super Yang-Mills model of gauge group ADE, then at large volume we can think of the effective 4-dimensional theory we get as a sort of twisted compactification down to on this 3 manifold of this 7-dimensional gauge theory. And then a Kaluza-Klein analysis gives you the following spectrum, namely at low energies. And by low energies I mean, so the limit in which this description is good, let me just emphasize, is the large volume and very, very low energy limit below the energy scale set by the size of this 3 manifold. And so that's the spectrum. It's N equals 1 ADE super Yang-Mills plus B1 of M adjoint multiplets, where B1 is the first Bethe number. And in fact, our examples are going to be rational homology spheres, so we won't have any adjoints. So what about examples? So in practice, examples of these spaces can be constructed as quotients of smooth R4 bundles over a 3 manifold by finite subgroups of SU2. So for example, there is a known G2 holonomy metric, which is a metric on the total space of the spin bundle over the 3 sphere, which is topologically trivial. And it's a complete G2 holonomy metric and was discovered by Bryant, Salomon, and also Gibbons, Page, and Pope. This metric admits an isometry three SU2 isometries, and if we quotient by finite subgroups of one particular choice of such SU2 isometry, then that has the action that we require here. In other words, that the total space is topologically R4 mod gamma times S3. So we end up in this low energy limit in 4 dimensions with pure super Yang-Mills theory with ADE gauge group. So let me just remind you about some of the interesting properties that this theory is believed to have. Discrete chiral symmetry breaking, a finite number of supersymmetric vacua, the number of vacua being H, the dual Coxeter number of the ADE group. The value of the superpotential in each of those vacuum can be written in that form. So it roughly looks like it's generated by fractional instantons, because if H were 1, then the exponent would be the 1 instanton action. Confinement is another interesting property, and it's also believed that this theory has a mass gap. So we're going to attempt to demonstrate properties 2, 3, and 4, or actually I'll mainly focus on properties 2 and 3, and hopefully you'll hear more about property 4 in the next talk. So how are we going to demonstrate the existence of these supersymmetric vacua? Well, what we're going to do is just compactify on a circle down to 3 dimensions and consider type 2A theory on this singular orbifold G2 holonomy times R3. And because this, as I described, that this space J is an orbifold of a smooth G2 holonomy manifold, we can use orbifold techniques and string theory, at least in the large volume limit that I was talking about, is well defined. And so let's compute the spectrum. The answer is as follows. One gets 2R, where R is the rank of the gauge group, or of the ADE gauge group, massless scalars. And we can think of these, so these arise, this is the spectrum in the twisted sector, which is what we're going to focus on here. The reason you get R, firstly, is that R is the number of conjugacy classes of the ADE gauge group, of the finite subgroup of SU2. And we can think of these scalars in the following way. There are R scalars, which I'm calling here phi I, which we can think of as periods of the B field through a basis of 0 size 2 cycles in R4 mod gamma. And similarly, there are, more properly, these guys arise in a twisted Never-Schwarz sector. And these guys are similar periods of the Ramon-Ramon 5 form potential and arise in the are really twisted Ramon-Ramon scalars. But this kind of geometric description is useful to keep track of the spectrum and helps. It will be useful later on to us. So if we compare, in the comparison with field theory, the phis are Wilson lines. So now we're considering super Yang-Mills theory on R3 times S1. And the phis are Wilson lines through the circle. And the rho i's are dual photons. So remember that in three dimensions, if I give an expectation value to the Wilson line, the gauge group gets broken to its maximal torus. And the larger this expectation value, the freer and freer the theory becomes, and the rows can then be dualized. The resulting R photons can be dualized to scalars. And that's what those fields are. Okay, so what about quantum effects in this background? Well, because we have a four supercharged theory, BPS instantons, i.e. instantons which are invariant under half the supersymmetries, could generate a superpotential. And in the background that we're talking about, the relevant instantons are D2 brains which wrap supersymmetric three cycles. And in fact, in this G2 holonomy space, there is only one supersymmetric three cycle, which is the three sphere which sits at the origin in R4. So, what can we say about such a superpotential? Well, why don't we look at the world volume gauge theory of that D2 brain? Well, firstly, because the D2 brain is wrapping a supersymmetric cycle, as pointed out by Bishadsky, Sadoff, and Vaffa, the world volume theory will be a topological field theory on the three sphere. And precisely which topological field theory follows from Douglas and Moore's analysis of D brains on orbifold singularities. So open strings on orbifold analysis will tell you that you get a quiver gauge theory, and this time the gauge group is given by the affine Dinkin diagram associated with the ADE. So it's a product of unitary, the gauge group is a product of unitary groups of ranks given by the Dinkin labels. So for instance, for SU, for the SUN Yang-Mills theory in the bulk, the theory on the world volume of the instanton has gauge group U1 to the N. Now this theory actually has a Coulomb branch. This is the world volume theory of the D2 brain, has a Coulomb branch corresponding to the position of the D2 brain in the three dimensions that we've compactified type 2 string theory to. Well, we haven't actually compactified, but in the three dimensions where the gauge theory we're interested in lives. And it's well known that the interpretation of this Coulomb branch is the following, that roughly because the positions of the D2 brain do not have to be correlated by gamma ADE in the space-time directions, in the R3 direction, that a single D2 brain can fractionate. And in fact, there are R plus one such instantons, one for each node of the affine Dinkin diagram. And there's a further very useful point, which is that, as pointed out by Diaconescu, Douglas, and Gomez, that these fractional brains can actually be are better thought of as, so the individual fractional brains now are better thought of as, in this case, D4 brains, which wrap the zero size 2 cycle times the S3. Now, actually, one comment is because the B field along this direction, which corresponds along sigma, is non-zero. In other words, that these twisted Nevers-Schwartz B fields have a non-zero expectation value. These D4 brains are not massless, even though they're wrapping what I was describing as a zero size 2 cycle. Okay, so now since these four brains are magnetically dual to D2 brains wrapping those same zero size two cycles. And the D2 brain, these D2 brains are actually the W bosons associated with the gauge symmetry being broken from the ADE group to its maximal torus. So that means that the D4 brain instantons are magnetic monopoles from the point of view of three-dimensional field theory. Does everybody follow that? Because I think I went a little quick. So I have time to explain that again if anyone wants me to. Okay. So, well, let me just briefly summarize. What we have is the following picture. D2, we would just consider what a single charge 1 D2 brain wrapping this supersymmetric three cycle. That charge 1 D2 brain can fractionate into R plus 1 constituents. And each of those individual constituents can be thought of as a D4 brain. But since we started off with a single charge 1, a single D2 brain, the total configuration total carries zero D4 brain charge, which you may want to think of as in terms of an anti-monopole charge in some sense. Okay, so if the superpotential is generated, it's going to be given in terms of the action for these fractional D2 brains. And that action is given in terms of the D4 brain action. So as you know, the D4 brain action contains a coupling to the 5-form, the Ramondamon 5-form field, and a coupling to the B field. So in the language of the rows and phis, this action contains terms of the following type, where theta was the space-time, is the space-time theta angle associated with the gauge coupling of the four-dimensional gauge theory. So because of holomorphy, this action should actually take the following form, because theta, in some sense, theta is a complex parameter, is the real part of a complex parameter called tau. The reason that it's a parameter in the theory will be explained in the next talk. But from the point of view of gauge theory, that's the holomorphic gauge coupling. So since the superpotential is a holomorphic function of the chiral superfields and coupling constants, the action for the D4 brain has to take this form. Now, if you actually look at the corresponding calculation that's been done in field theory, so for the case of SU2 gauge group, Seiberg and Witten showed this. This was extended in the context of F-theory by Katz and Vaffer, and a British collaboration recently been studying this to actually calculate the four-dimensional space-time superpotential precisely, including the coefficient, in order to resolve certain conflicts in the literature concerning the coefficient of the superpotential. So you can actually use this three-dimensional story to compute the precise four-dimensional space-time superpotential. Okay, and so if you compare to field theory, it's precisely these combinations of fields, the SIs, which do get a superpotential from these monopole instanton configurations. And in field theory, as I mentioned, there exist H vacua. So that convinces me that it's reasonable to assume that that superpotential in this limit that I'm looking at is generated. So the general answer for the superpotential is that it's just given by an affine Toda superpotential. So these terms correspond to the R nodes of the usual Dynkin diagram. This guy is, you can associate to the affine node of the Dynkin diagram. And if you notice here, the sum of all these fields appears with the opposite sign here is that is precisely because the total D4 brain charge of the single instanton configuration that we're talking about vanishes. So that convinces me that M theory on this singular G2, M theory on this singular G2 holonomy space does have a limit which is pure ADE Supiang Mills in four dimensions. And therefore, that we've explained. Yes?
Could you explain where that last one of the power case came from? That we saw electrical.
Yeah. So each of the terms is the contribution from each of these individual fractional instantons. And the first, so in the case of SUN, actually this should be
n minus 1.
So this, in general, this sum goes from 1 to the rank of the gauge group of the four-dimensional gauge theory. And these terms can be associated to the nodes of the usual Dynkin diagram. This term corresponds to the affine node of the Dynkin diagram. And the reason that this particular combination of fields appears is because the total D4 brain charge vanishes. So when you look at what the different couplings to the five-form potential are, you have to have that the total configuration vanishes. Is that clear? Okay, so there's a slightly different perspective on this story, which is D6 brains wrapping the three sphere in the deformation of the conifold singularity in complex dimension 3. And that was explained by Kumrun yesterday, so I won't go into too much details, but if you take n D6 brains wrapping three sphere in the, if you take n such D6 brains, then in the large n limit, the corresponding gravitational configuration is the resolution of the conifold, which is the total space of the sum of degree minus 1 line bundle over P1, n units of two-form flux through the P1, which is a two-sphere. So one question is, how do these two type 2A backgrounds, one an open string background, one a closed string background, look like from the perspective of M theory? So both of these type 2A backgrounds are limits of M theory on G2 holonomy spaces. So if you turn up the string coupling in the D6 brain system, we know that the D6 brains from 11-dimensional parallel, coincident D6 brains in 11 dimensions turn into an AN-1 singularity. And so turning up the string coupling, one gets a space of precisely the type I've been talking about. And because of supersymmetry, this space should have G2 holonomy. On the other side, we have a space in type 2A, which is topologically it's R4 times S2. But in addition, we have n units of Ramond-Ramond two-form flux through the S2. Well, if you think about where the Ramond-Ramond two-form flux comes from in 11 dimensions, It means that the 11th dimension is non-trivially fibered over the 10 manifold where the type 2A string theory lives. And in this case, this is just the Hopf vibration of the lens space, S3 mod Zn. So in 11 dimensions, one should end up with something which is an R4 bundle over lens space of degree n. And again, because of supersymmetry, it should have G2 holonomy. I should say, though, that down here, even though I've written that the resolved conifold, what you actually get, because of the presence of the two-form fluxes, means that the actual type 2A background has a metric which is not Calabi-Yau, but is symplectically equivalent to the Calabi-Yau metric. So, in the paper of Atiyah, Malasina, and Baffa, they argued using holomorphy that the two M-theory vacua I was talking about are continuously connected without any phase transition. So this argument has been refined by Atiyah and Witten, and will hopefully be described by Edward in the next talk. And we heard a dual description of this in terms of type 2B theory and brains by Mina yesterday. So the upshot, anyway, the main result is that there is no physical phase transition between M-theory on this singular G2 holonomy space and M-theory on this smooth G2 holonomy space. So this guy over here is a smooth G2 holonomy manifold. It's in fact a metric on the total space of the spin bundle over, of the trivial spin bundle over the lens space. Nice and smooth. And I'll repeat that the result is that there is no phase transition between M3 on this singular orbifold and M3 on this smooth G2 manifold. So that means that since there's no phase transition, it means that we might have some hope in identifying confining strings in this smooth, by considering M3 in this smooth G2 holonomy space. And turns out that these are actually M2 brains which wrap one cycles in this G2 holonomy space. So these strings are classified by the first homology group of the 7 manifold. And in the gauge theory, they are classified by the center of the ADE gauge group. So happily the two things agree. I'll just briefly explain how you see that. So what is the first homology group of that 7 manifold with G2 holonomy? Well, because it's I think I've written too much here, but because the spin bundle over that 3 manifold is contractible to the 3 manifold, the first homology group is just the first homology group of the 3 manifold. But since this 3 manifold is topologically S3 divided by gamma ADE, that this first homology group is just the abelianization of the fundamental group, which in this case is gamma. So the abelianization of a finite group is just the finite group modulo any commutators. You set all commutators to be trivial. And so for the SUN case, gamma is abelian, so the first homology group is given by gamma, which in this case is Zn, and that happily agrees with the center of SUN. For gamma equals SO2k, the first fundamental group that the string charges send out to be Z2 times Z2, and that is the center of spin 4K. So in other words, that's the right answer for a gauge theory SO4K gauge group, which can couple to spinner sources. The case of spin 4K plus 2 is slightly different, but again, we get agreement, and similarly, we get agreement for the E6, E7, E8 cases. Actually, one way to see at least the orders of these groups is by noting that the abelianization of the order of the abelianization of a finite group is just the number of irreducible one-dimensional representations. But because of the Mackay correspondence, that's the number of nodes of Dynkin index 1 in the affine Dynkin diagram. So, that gives a demonstration of confinement in Super Yang-Mills theory by exploiting the fact that the corresponding M-theory background has this parameter, which in one limit, or in fact in several different limits, as Edward will explain, hopefully, reduces to some very nice, smooth G2 holonomy space. Okay, so that ends the main part of the talk. So I wanted to offer some very modest vision for the future. I think it'd be interesting to investigate other more complicated singularities of G2 holonomy in the context of M-theory. In other words, what kind of physics lies buried in such singular spaces. It seems quite probable to me that chiral fermions will be found inside G2 holonomy spaces, hopefully in the near future, and various different arguments to support that. Perhaps we should also be thinking about building some kind of realistic particle physics model from such singularities. I mean, who knows what kind of insights that might provide into important problems such as supersymmetry breaking and the cosmological constant problem. I'll end there.
Any questions?
I wanted to understand the limit in which you got the pure four-dimensional ADE gauge theory. Just to clarify the question, I would have thought if you took the volume of the three sphere to be big, you'd get the pure gauge theory at very low energies, because by taking the volume big, it's weakly coupled, and then at exponentially small energies when everything else is decoupled, it becomes strongly coupled. Is that the limit you meant, or is there a different one?
That is the limit.
Oh, thank you.
Other questions?
No, I don't think so. At least not in the supersymmetric context. There are various ways to argue that you would end up with something which is dual. You could end up, so you could take, you could. There is an argument I have which would say that M theory on, so a limit of M theory on certain G2 holonomy space has a dual description in terms of M theory on a certain kind of Calabi-Yau fourfold. And then there's an F-theory limit of that. So there are various arguments in F-theory that you need to turn on G-flux to get. So models which are, so F-theory models on fourfolds which are dual to chiral compactifications of the heterotic string theory on a Calabi-Yau threefold, seem to correspond to models with G-flux. But I think in the... I'd be surprised if it were, if the statement was that you have to turn on G-flux in the actual M-theory background, but who knows?
Any other questions?
So I looked at those papers quite closely, and they contain anti-brains in their configuration, so they consider D6 brains wrapping 6 tori, and because of tadpole cancellation, you have to put an anti-brain in somewhere. So the models they actually get, even though they at some point in the moduli space could cancel the tadpole, cancel tadpoles with a chiral spectrum, none of those models will lift to G2 holonomy compactification.
I guess you already said this, but in the context of the heterotic M-theory duality, you already know there are examples, right? Heterotic theory compactified and Calabi gives you chiral fermions.
Yes.
So just mapping it will give you identified some singular G2 holonomy.
Yeah, so I mean...
So there's existence already in
some... Yeah, there's various indirect arguments like that based on like fiber-wise application of higher dimensional dualities that would point to the existence of chiral fermions, but really what I want to do is find precisely what kind of singularities in G2 holonomy spaces support chiral fermions.
Other questions? If not, let's thank our speaker again. And we'll rejoin at 3:45.
Thanks. I thought about giving a few more details about the chiral fermions, but tonight I decided against it. Are you going to be giving some terms?
Not in this talk.
I mean, no, I didn't finish my questions.